Thank you for listening to Call the Roll, a public affairs program produced by the Columbus City Council and aired on Freedom FM. I'm your host, John Ivanek, Communications Director for the City Council. On this week's show, Call Before You Dig, Donate Life Month in Columbus, and real-world skills for teens and young adults in a summer internship program. But first, regulating pedicabs in Columbus. The new form of urban transportation has exploded in popularity in the downtown the last few years. You've probably seen them on the streets. Bikes with a single driver pulling a person or persons seated in back of them. The cabs are the descendants of rickshaws. Pedicabs are cheap and a fun way to experience the city and can be found in the downtown and the campus during the Buckeye football Saturdays. Now, since they are so new and present unique safety concerns for both the riders and the operators, the City of Columbus is creating a new city code to deal with the industry. And the great thing is, much of the code created is industry driven. Here's Safety and Judiciary Committee Chair Councilmember Michelle Mills during a public hearing she held just this week in City Council chambers.
Updating our vehicle for hire code has certainly been a priority for mine for quite a bit of time. It seems like we've been working on this particular code for quite a while. I actually have that code number in my head, which is not normal. I usually know them by name and not by name and number. But again, we've been working on this for quite some time, and certainly the inclusion of pedicabs is a part of that as a priority of mine to make sure we have a comprehensive piece of legislation that moves forward as the city continues to move forward and be progressive. Last April, the mayor and I met with the Department of Public Safety to discuss the state of the industry and certainly some improvements we felt are absolutely necessary and some that we hoped for. But we did not do that alone. We have certainly engaged with many stakeholders as it relates to vehicle for hire and every part of it, including the pedicab industry as well. Again, starting this in last April and continue to work forward for all of the changes necessary for vehicle for hire. Following this meeting that we had in April, we began to discuss some of the policy decisions that were necessary. And throughout the course of 2012, many of these decisions were presented to the Vehicle for Hire Board for deliberation, alteration, and voting. And I want to thank the members of the board who have been with us on this journey as well. Taking a comprehensive approach to changing the industry is certainly a priority for us. And beginning in January, we started holding hearings on some of these changes. And my office and the Department of Public Safety have continued to meet with stakeholders affected by these changes because we just don't want to make them in a closed box and come out and say this is what we come up with. We've been a very inclusive office, and the entire process has been very inclusive. And I want to thank public safety for that because that's not always the most expeditious way of moving changes, engaging lots of stakeholders. So I want to thank them. It's a very important step, but it is a time-consuming and but certainly a labor of love that I know we have all embraced. Starting in February, we began meeting with a group of pedicab owners, particularly for this chapter, to discuss creating a new chapter in the City Code 592, which to regulate the pedicabs. Through discussions with these owners, the city representatives were able to get a better understanding of the daily operations of a pedicab owner and driver. Compromises were reached and further changes were made to the proposed code. The proposed code changes that are presented here tonight will help this industry become yet another highlight for Columbus. Our tourism and hospitality industries are seeing quite a bit of growth, and licensing pedicabs will give the industry legitimacy and allow them to fill a needed gap in transportation services. Consumer protection is also an important element of the changes that are being proposed. As a public safety chair, I certainly want to make sure that passengers and drivers and all those who entrust their lives to our pedicab drivers are certainly safe. Beginning with the discussion on pedicabs and all of the vehicle for hire changes, consumer protection and safety of all members, drivers, owners, operators are all certainly a part of it as well.
That was Councilmember Mills. The proposed code calls for all operators to have a valid driver's license, have the pedicab registered and inspected by the City of Columbus, all fares and fees clearly visibly marked for the rider to see, and sets a minimum insurance requirement as well. Here's Assistant Safety Director Amanda Ford.
Thank you, Councilmember Mills. As you spoke earlier, you know, we have been working on these vehicle for hire codes for the last year. And while they've been challenging, they've been rather entertaining as well. So we wanted to make sure when we were working on this code that we included pedicabs. A couple years ago, our license section worked with the Columbus Division of Police to actually start drafting some legislation for pedicabs, but unfortunately, just workloads and missed opportunities, they were not able to move forward with that. So we wanted to make sure that we definitely covered it in this complete rewrite of the code. So the industry actually contacted me last year requesting legislation. You know, I know that they've had some challenges out there with other organizations coming into the city of Columbus and maybe not always operating the way and at the standards that our current industry operates. So we wanted to make sure, they wanted to make sure that they had some regulations in place to help with that. So with their support, you know, I encouraged them and told them that we're working on this and that we'll reach out to you when we have a solid draft together. So we reached out to them several months ago, and we'll talk a little bit about our due diligence, but they've been a great industry to work with. They were very open to ideas, definitely willing to compromise, and just kind of that breath of fresh air. So they were very different than what we've worked with on some other projects, so they've been a tremendous help working through this process. So obviously some of the reasons for the pedicab legislation, they are a part of our scenery here in Columbus, and they have been for quite some time. Obviously very popular in the Short North, Arena District, Campus area, that Park Street area. We currently have about 14 owners in the city with 26 pedicabs. Obviously, I know during certain events, we definitely see more than that. We do have some out-of-state companies that do come in and operate during some of those special events. But currently, we have 26 cabs that operate just in the city of Columbus. Obviously, they are a vehicle for hire, so we do want to make sure that they're following some of the same rules that our taxi cabs and livery vehicles and horse carriages are required to maintain. Obviously, we want to provide clear guidance and inspection requirements. We want to make sure that not only are the drivers safe, but the passengers are safe as well. Obviously, that's always going to be our top priority, is to make sure that you know, they're a part of public transportation, and we want to make sure that they maintain their own safety while keeping their passengers in mind as well. As for our due diligence, obviously, I said earlier, we've met with them a couple times. We took what we thought was somewhat of a solid draft, and we all tore it apart. We sat in a room together, and you know, obviously we had an obligation to learn a little more about their industry, what some of their challenges are, what their needs are. We answered a lot of their questions. Obviously, they did have concerns along with legislation. Obviously, that impacts their industry as far as how they currently operate, some of the additional costs that they will incur. But, you know, we had some very positive conversations. Everybody always left with a smile on their face, understanding that, you know, this is a tough thing to work through. So, obviously, after that first meeting, we went back to the drawing board and made lots of changes, you know, just after them explaining how they can meet this requirement and how they can't meet this, you know, that we needed to make some changes and be a little more flexible in some of our guidelines that we were requiring. Requirements under this legislation, obviously, they will fall under the Vehicle for Hire Board, and as part of that, they will have representation on the board. The owners will be required to get that Vehicle for Hire owner's license. All drivers will be required to have a vehicle for hire driver's license, and the key piece to that is making sure they're going through the proper background checks. And obviously, the owners and drivers will be required to follow 592, the pedicab code. Under the vehicle for hire owner license, it will expire on June 30th of each year, and obviously we have some staggered time set between all of our different vehicle for hire, so we've chosen June 30th as their expiration date. They must have a valid driver's license. They need to provide some of that basic information about the pedicab so that we know what their business name is, the color of their pedicabs, any seating capacities, things like that. Provide evidence of liability protection. Obviously, this was a real challenge, you know. A lot of other cities require anywhere from $1 million to $2 million in liability coverage. Obviously, you know, as we've looked at our taxi cabs and livery vehicles and horse carriages, we didn't feel, one, that it was fair for us to require them to carry that $1 million. We tried to be fair and put it at what we're requiring our taxi cabs at, but obviously this is an issue that we need to continue to look at. And I know we've made that same promise with our taxi cabs as well, that we're going to continue to evaluate this issue of insurance and make sure that they're fully covered for their protection and for the protection of their passengers. Obviously, they'll have to meet inspection requirements. You know, we will require them to have their bike inspected by a bike shop, a reputable bike shop. We want to make sure that structurally it's safe and sound. And then obviously they'll go through an inspection process with our license department as well. So it's up there that they'll have a re-inspection fee. Obviously there will be no fee for their initial inspection. Obviously we'll put a decal on the back of the vehicle, just as we do all of our other vehicle for hires. And then the owner must maintain an operator log. This is something that we changed for our pedicabs, as our taxi cabs have to keep daily trip sheets. We're not requiring our pedicabs. Additionally, that was one thing that was actually in our original document, but we quickly learned that we got to change that because they're on a bike. They could potentially be out in rain, you know, hopefully not the snow, but, you know, they just have inclement weather, obviously, to deal with. So we decided it was probably more appropriate to have the owner maintain that log. And, you know, so it's definitely different than what we're doing with our taxi cabs, but we feel it's reasonable. They don't have room for a clipboard and a stack of papers to keep logs, so we realize they're really limited on the amount of space that they have. Under the vehicle for hire driver license, they'll obviously have to have a valid Ohio driver's license. They must be 18 years of age, and they'll be required to submit a driver abstract. They'll submit to a criminal background check. Obviously, we're going to go back 7 years and look into their past to make sure that they have no offenses of OVI, physical violence, sex offenses, homicide, or manslaughter, and related to the operation of a motor vehicle. You know, and one part of that is obviously we will not license any registered sex offenders as well. And then they'll have to have a certificate from a licensed physician or a nurse practitioner for a physical. We want to make sure that, obviously, their physical health is important, as, you know, they're pedaling around the city, and obviously they're carrying passengers as well, so that takes some physical stamina just to do the job itself. Some of the inspection requirements that they'll have to meet, obviously we want to make sure that the pedicab is clean and in a safe condition. We don't want to cause any personal injury to the passengers or damage any of their property. It must have 3 or more wheels. It must have a unibody frame. Fortunately, all of our pedicabs here do have that unibody frame. I know that was one concern that we had initially going into this. We've seen several pedicabs that actually have an attachment to a regular bike. So we like that uniframe structure. It's much more secure than what an attachment would be. Obviously, we want them to have some type of hydraulic or mechanical disc brakes with a secondary braking system. You know, I'm sure when it's just one person on that bike, it's much easier to slow down if you're going down a hill. But obviously, if you have a couple people in the back of that, you're going to need a little help in making sure that you can stop in time. Obviously, we want them to have an audible signaling device and basically seating for no more than what the safety belt will securely fit. We realize that not all of them have safety belts in them, but we're requiring that they do have that, so they'll be required to put a lap belt in those that don't have them. We'll require spoke reflectors, a slow-moving vehicle sign on the back, and then obviously we want to make sure that they can be seen specifically at night. So we're requiring that they have a headlight, a taillight, and turn signals.
The SOAR Hire Youth Summer Employment Program is about to begin another year providing real-world experience for teens and young adults. Thanks to the partnership among the Franklin County Board of Commissioners, the City of Columbus, and the Central Ohio Workforce Investment Corporation, or COWIC, nearly 700 Franklin County youth will have the opportunity to take part in paid summer internships with Columbus companies. The program is open to those between the ages of 14 and 24, and participants will receive hands-on training in communications, offices, administration, construction, advertising, marketing, graphic design, green energy, all while developing credible work histories for future employers. Here's Workforce Development Committee Chair, Councilmember Priscilla R. Tyson.
I want to thank Jane Grody and the Grody family for hosting us here at their headquarters, and also for being in our city for 50 years. Thank you for really being such a major community partner, that you have demonstrated that as an organization, you can do well and do good at the same time, that you do not stay in business for 50 years and you're successful, obviously, by the number of people that are working here, the number of restaurants. So you're doing well financially, and you're also doing really good work in our community. And that is just an incredible combination. And your business will continue to grow because you care about the community. And kind of a little sidebar. Yesterday, I was out visiting one of the women's homeless shelters, and during my visit there, it was discussed that, and I'm also chair of workforce development, it was discussed that the leader of the organization has had meetings with Jane in regards to making sure that we have a workforce development program for homeless women. So not only are you hiring young people and ensuring young people have a chance to move forward in their lives, but also there's so many dimensions, as the mayor just stated, with the work that's been going on the South Side, but then to be able to think about women and the homeless shelter and being able to put a workforce program together to help them to move forward their lives, because women, as women, we know how important we are in the lives of a family. And so I wanted to say thank you, Jane, for the ongoing work that Donato's is playing to move our community forward. Thank you so much. I am so excited about the SOAR Hire program. For all the partners that are here, the county is a major partner for the work that COWIC is doing and interviewing all these young people and helping them to give them the initial soft skills to be able to come out and to work with us. In the city's perspective, we're going to have about 250 interns at the city. The mayor mentioned he's going to have about 7 or 8 in his office. Columbus City Council will certainly have many of these young people in our office, and then young people will be throughout the whole city of Columbus. And so we're excited to be able to have an investment of about $440,000 from the city to be able to have these young people within our organization. But SOAR Hire means so much more. It just means so much more. As the mayor stated, he too was an individual that got to work during the summer, and almost like we have the same speech, I too was able to be in a summer hire program. My initial hire program was at the neighborhood house where I was very young. I picked up trash at the neighborhood house. My second job, though, was one that I worked in a profession that I would have never thought I would be in. I worked at a paint company. I was the only person of color that worked there and the only young person that was there, but that experience meant so much to me. I learned about paint and wall covering. I learned about, which is a hard skill that I certainly didn't have, but I also learned a lot of soft skills. I learned how to work with people that were different than me. I learned how to make sure that I was there on time. I learned that how to be a team player, so I learned consensus building. I had a caring adult that looked after me, and so that mentor was so important. And even though I had my mother and my father, it still meant it had a different meaning when I had these individuals that were there for me. I grew tremendously through that opportunity. And that's why it is so important that young people have an opportunity to learn soft skills and hard skills. And we know that if you are a hiring employer, you know one of the reasons that people aren't successful is because they do not have those soft skills. They don't know how to work with people. They don't know how to be a consensus builder. They don't know how to come to work on time. All those kinds of things they don't know. Well, when you hire these young people and you give them an opportunity to be in your organization, you're changing your life. You're giving them skills to be able to move forward in life, to be able to be the employees of the future and the employers of the future. You're also changing the trajectory of their lives. You're giving them an opportunity, as the mayor said, sometimes young people don't have a place to go in the summers, and what do? If you don't have something to do, you'll just figure out, you'll probably do something you're not supposed to do. But by you hiring them, you're helping the safety of the city. You're giving these young people what they need to be able to be the future leaders of Columbus, and you're changing their lives forever. So for me and for others, because someone took the chance in hiring me as a young person, it allows me to stand here today. It has changed the trajectory of my life, and that's what you're doing. So for those of you out here who are hiring these young people, thank you, thank you, thank you, because it isn't just about paying them, it's about changing their lives. It's about changing the next 7 generations of their life. It's about that individual moving forward and being successful. Their children will be successful. Their children will be successful. So it's not just about the pay. It's about changing of a life. So for those employers out here that have not yet signed up to be an employer, we need you. We need you to change the life of a young person. And that way you'll change the history of the the history moving forward for the city of Columbus, because these young people will absolutely be instrumental into the ongoing success of our city.
And if you'd like more information on this program, contact COWIC. Tis the season to call before you dig. Work in the yard or a flower bed can become a real headache, even deadly, if you strike a buried utility line. More than 256,000 underground lines are struck each year in the United States, and aside from the physical harm, a struck line can also disrupt crucial services to your neighborhood or community. That's why a group of service providers want you to call 811 before you dig. The program is a free service from the Central Ohio Damage Prevention Council. Tom Hawk from the council was on hand as members of the group participated in a beautification effort at the Barrick Recreation Center on the south side. They planted trees and mulched the area near the rec center and a playground of a nearby school. It is the fourth consecutive volunteer effort at a local rec center, giving back to the community with this important message in mind.
The Central Ohio Damage Prevention Council is out here to promote Call Before You Dig, 811. And we work with the Columbus Recs and Parks Division to make improvements to our community centers.
What can people do at home to make sure that they don't puncture a utility line while this time of year doing some, you know, work around the house?
Very simply, they can call 811. OUPS, Ohio Utility Protection Service, will then send a message out to all the utility owners in the area, and they will come out and mark their lines.
How far down should people be aware of these lines being? Because a lot of folks, you know, they're going to do some, you know, gardening, that type thing. They're going to go an inch maybe. What's the rule of thumb?
The rule of thumb actually is Ohio law. Ohio law describes the act of penetrating the earth as an excavation. So if you're going to penetrate the earth, even if you're just putting in a small flower bed or a garden, you still have to call 811 before you dig. Most of the utilities can be anywhere from 1 to 2 inches down to 14, 15 foot deep.
And how much lead time should residents give when they call 811 before the utility lines are marked?
It's actually 48 business hours. So if you call on a Monday, 8 a.m., they'll be ready to go by Wednesday, 8 a.m. One thing to keep in mind for homeowners and residents, if you're working a project on the weekend, you need to call it in by Wednesday to ensure that things are marked by the weekend.
And if they call during, if a resident calls, you know, Monday or Tuesday, do they have to be home when the crew comes out to mark their land?
No, they do not. And they do not have to be present. The only thing we would ask is if you have any dogs in the yard, anything that would stop the locating folks to from getting into the facility to market or into the property to market, that they have those put away.
4 years running now helping Columbus rec centers and the beautification efforts. Why is this important for you and your group?
Well, it's very important. First of all, we want to be of service to our community. Secondly, we want to educate folks as to what the importance of the Ohio Dig Law.
The Central Ohio Damage Prevention Council includes American Electric Power, AT&T, Columbia Gas of Ohio, the Franklin County Engineer's Office, the Utilities Protection Service, and Time Warner Cable. Recreation and Parks Committee Chair Zach M. Klein was on hand for the 811 Call Before You Dig Day to thank volunteer and city staff who participated.
I think it's important to note, John, of how terrific the city employees are that staff the Recreation and Parks Department. You know, I've often said, and I'm a firm believer, that the Recreation and Parks Department and the Rec and Parks services that we provide are the backbones to strong and safe neighborhoods. And when you couple that power of our employees with the volunteers and the energy that our volunteers bring, we wouldn't be able to do it alone. And I think Director McKnight noted that last year there was, on the equivalent work hour, about $2 million of volunteer hours that were logged. And that not only makes the Rec and Parks Department successful, and it also makes the City of Columbus a success. And it's all about the kids anyway, and it makes the children's lives better, enriches children's lives and enriches families' lives by providing strong recreation and parks.
That was Councilmember Klein. Carla Rothan is the chair of the Recreation and Parks Commission.
I have had the privilege to get to travel and see a lot of other cities, and I have to say that we are top of the line, and it has to do not only with our staff, but the spirit of Columbus, which is about the people, and that's what we're here today to celebrate. And what a better campaign, Call Before You Dig. Now that has really taken off. See, we can really come together as a community and have a little media marketing campaign and it take off like this and really help people. And I think it's a wonderful opportunity for us to thank those folks today.
And this 811 campaign has been at various rec centers throughout the cities all around, this time, you know, on the south side. The value for these volunteers helping our community and helping our facilities can't be understated.
Exactly. You know, volunteerism is also the spirit of Columbus and the spirit of America. And so we want to encourage people to come out this summer, come out to our recreation centers and our parks especially, and volunteer. Take a Saturday, maybe an hour, and do some weeding or help the Recreation and Parks Department do their job, because there's no better value than the beautiful nature that we have and the spirit of being together. So thanks.
A little does go a long way.
Yeah, it does. You'd be surprised. I mean, mulch for two people only takes a few minutes, but for one person takes a long time.
So. If you put 40 or 50 people together.
Exactly. You're doing really well. So it's a lot of land to cover, and we're trying to keep that land, and we're trying to keep it natural, and so that we don't have buildings on every single piece of green space that's in Columbus. So it's important for us to maintain that, or else somebody will build something on it. So let's make sure that we keep our green space safe and sound.
April is Donate Life Month in Columbus. It is a time to remember the more than 3,400 Ohioans waiting an organ transplant at any given time. A single donor can potentially save the lives of 8 people through organ donation by donating their heart, lungs, liver, pancreas, kidneys, small intestine to enhance the lives of more than 50 others through the tissue donation by donating cornea, veins, heart valves, bones, skin, tendons, ligaments, even nerves. Sherry Goodwin is a City of Columbus employee and a kidney transplant recipient. Came to City Council to tell her story and encourage others to give the gift of life.
Council President Ginther, Councilmember Tyson, and members of Council, my name is Sherry Goodwin, and I'm a personnel analyst too for the City of Columbus. For the past 18 years, I've helped test our police and fire candidates to ensure suitability for hiring. It is a job that I love to do and one that I wasn't sure I would be able to return to when I got sick very suddenly about 10 years ago. In 2003, I wasn't feeling my best. I thought I had the flu, but after my symptoms got worse, I decided to go to urgent care. Once there, they took a quick look at me and then told me I needed to go to the emergency room for treatment. At that time, I was told I didn't have the flu. Instead, I was in complete kidney failure due to my uncontrolled high blood pressure. Once I arrived at the hospital, they immediately put me on dialysis for 2 weeks to help regulate my kidneys. Once I was stable, I endured 5 more years of dialysis while waiting for a kidney transplant. Over time, my energy depleted, and I found it harder and harder to do my daily tasks. I was no longer living as a young, vibrant woman in her early 30s. I was now tired and struggling to make it through my week. Before I was listed for a transplant, my family members were tested to see if they could be my donor. However, for one reason or another, they were all ruled out. I would now have to depend on the generosity of a stranger to keep me alive. It was March 14th, 2008. When the call I had been waiting for came. But it wasn't the call I expected. I was second in line for the kidney. After waiting for what seemed like an eternity, I was told the first person listed was not able to receive the transplant at that time. I was next in line. On March 16th, 2008, I received the gift of life. I later corresponded with my donor family and learned my donor was Jackie, who had lived her life right here in Columbus, Ohio. I've had the opportunity to meet my donor family, and we correspond regularly. After my transplant, I couldn't believe how wonderful I felt. It took some time to recover, but now, 5 years later, I can say how incredible this gift was. It has changed the course of my life forever. I now volunteer with Lifeline of Ohio and have done a variety of activities, including a presentation to the local chapter of the Lynx Incorporated, a group of dedicated, extraordinary women who are committed to enriching and sustaining the culture of African Americans. I've taken on the cause of donation, and I am grateful to show them and the rest of the world what a difference it can make in someone's life. On behalf of all of us touched by donation, thank you for your support of organ, eye, and tissue donation.
We're out of time for this edition of Call the Roll. If you have a question or a comment, please email us at calltheroll@columbus.gov. That's CALLTHEROLL at columbus.gov. Don't forget you can follow the Columbus City Council on our Facebook and our Twitter pages. On behalf of the entire Columbus City Council, I'm your host, John Ivanek. Thanks for listening to Freedom FM, and have a great weekend.